Now this is more than a hobby. Give them more like I'm Bobby. This is my team and they got me. Shout out to Billy, we're bonding. We got us 3 cups, mate. I know it ain't too late. We'll turn that 3 into 4 and turn that 4 into 8. So come on, you Irons. It's time, throw on your claret and blue and listen up to this rhyme. 112 years, wow, iconic bowling ground at London Stadium now. Blowing bubbles from the crowd, let the Premier League know. The Irons going for the gold, scoring 100 plus goals like Paolo Di Canio. So kick it off at the homies, known as Brawley and Tony, and keep on blowing those bubbles until they bring us a trophy.
What is going on, everyone? Welcome back to another summer episode of the American West Ham Podcast. So many things have changed in the West Ham world since our show last month. We've got new players, a new backroom staff, a new director of football. Things are finally looking bright for West Ham fans. Will Golden Sullivan finally spend the money that they've said they would? We're also now down to the semifinals of the World Cup, and England are still in it. Who would have thought we'd be saying that a couple of months ago? Has this been the most exciting and dramatic World Cup ever? This will surely be a fantastic episode, so sit back, relax, and enjoy the show. Tony got you covered on that. Brawley got the stories and the facts. Together everything is down packed. 3-time gold winners, but now it's time to get another cup. West Ham fans stand up. West Ham fans stand up. I'm forever blowing bubbles, and my fortune's always hiding. It's the American West Ham Podcast, y'all best dialing. I'm forever blowing bubbles. I'm forever blowing bubbles.
It's another episode of the American West Ham Podcast. I am one of your co-hosts, Tony, from Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. We got Brawley Darwin on the other line. What you doing, buddy?
I am relaxing on my couch. I'm exhausted after a long day of work. I'm like, eyes are falling, but I'm excited to talk about this this show we have.
Man, I tell you what, I'm excited too. I'm trying to get the positivity in the air, as lately it's been a little up and down, but I'm cracking up a nice cold beer here, and I'm ready to rock on another episode of the American West Ham Podcast. So the first thing we got going is we both had some really busy summer schedules, so folks, that's why we haven't had many episodes coming at you, but we have a lot of action to talk about today. Right now we're at 1,907 followers. Let's get that up to 2,000, people. Give us a retweet and help us out and spread the word, because we try to do our best for you guys and we want to share as much as we can.
Absolutely. We'll just clarify. That's on Twitter, people. So get on Twitter. Follow us if you don't already. Retweet everything that we put out there, because, I mean, once we get to 2,000, I mean, that's a big milestone for us. So get following, people.
Yeah, definitely get it going, because we will have a ticket giveaway with our season preview episode. But right before the Liverpool game, I'm not sure exactly what we're going to do yet, but we will have some West Ham tickets involved. So go out there, spread the word, and we got a lot of fun things coming. Another thing we should chat about before we get going is the benefit for Isla that is going to happen in New York City on Sunday, July 22nd at 3 p.m. This strong little girl is coming over to America for some further treatment, and they're having a fundraiser for her at Smithfield Hall, which is a bar in Manhattan. There's going to be raffles, shirt sales, a happy hour, and all supporters are welcome. Bring your friends, not just West Ham. Bring your Manchester, your Newcastle. Bring them all, okay? It'll be a great thing for this little girl, and you'll enjoy the time as well. I wish I could be there. I'll be in Florida, but I really think that they're going to have a fantastic time.
And yeah, so all the proceeds go to Isla. While she and her family are going to be in New York City for further treatment, obviously they got the cost raised to come over here and pay for the treatment, but there's also cost of living that they have to factor in that they still need money for. So we need to do everything we can to help this little girl out while she's receiving treatment over here and show her some of that American hospitality, her and her family, while they're here. So if you are able to go to that, absolutely do it. I wish I could. I can't afford to go out to New York City. I'm a 14 or 15 hour drive away from New York City. I really wish I could make it.
Yeah, you're a bit further than I am.
Yeah, a lot further. But I've heard Smithfield is one of the best footy bars to watch in the country. That's one of like the bucket list bars that I would like to go to. Everyone says it's amazing. It's where the New York City Hammers watch. So And we are planning to have someone on from the New York City Hammers organization for our next show, and they're going to have more details and talk about it more in depth. So they're going to know more than we are. But just for now, that's the general information. If you have any questions, feel free to get in touch with one of us, or you can reach out to the New York City Hammers on Twitter or Facebook. They'll help you out in any way they can, I'm sure.
Yeah, definitely. If you get in touch with us, I'll point you, or Brian will point you in their direction. They're the ones who are hosting this exciting event, not us. But we're definitely here to promote it as well, because that's something we're passionate about, too. Another thing we're passionate about is West Ham United, obviously. That's the reason we do this podcast. Brawley, it was finally match day today.
Yeah, it was. We played Winterthur in Switzerland.
You don't sound excited about it.
I got to be honest, I have never heard of that club before that preseason fixture was announced. I did learn that Raphael Spiegel plays for them now, so our former keeper, who we, I think, released either last summer, or I don't remember when we let him go. But either way, he started for goal for them today. He played 60 minutes. He played an absolute world. He put on a show. I mean, he was the only reason they weren't losing going into the second half.
So you did watch the game?
I did. I did. I watched the whole thing. I kind of drifted in and out of sleep, because it was an 8 a.m. kickoff time for me. But I pretty much watched the entire game start to finish.
Yeah, because I was talking to you about it earlier, is I ended up not watching. I had some things I had to do today, which I probably should start watching preseason games a lot more closely, because it's our job to report on them now since we do a podcast. But I'll be honest with you, folks. I don't have interest in watching preseason games. I don't take them seriously. Because they're just for their warm-ups, they're training to get fitness, you know. I was getting really frustrated on Twitter earlier today when people were complaining about the results, or people just whining about certain things. This is the first time these dudes probably touched the ball in an actual game in, what, a month and a half now?
Yeah, and they're in a new system. We played a back four for the first time, and God knows how long the last time we saw a back four. So it's a totally new system that we're playing in, and they played two separate starting 11s in each half. So one 11 played the first half, the other 11 played the second half. So the result literally means nothing. I mean, was it ideal to concede three goals against a pub team from Switzerland? No, but it's they've been there. I think their first game is either next week or the week after. So they've been in preseason for almost a month now. So the fitness levels are totally different. I mean, it's just, there's literally nothing you should take away from this game other than the fact that we got to see some new players and some returning players out on loan, like Snodgrass, guys like that. That's kind of what I watched the preseason games for.
Yeah, I mean, the only reason I got excited was because it's finally match day again. Otherwise, like I said, I don't care. I have no interest in watching guys pretty much do a training session. I think it's glad to just be talking about West Ham again, though, rather than just the signings. It breaks it up a little bit. But other than that, I don't think there was much to take away. Did anybody really stick out for you, though? Anyone really show some oomph, or just another training match?
Yes and no. I thought Nathan Holland played a really good game, which is good to see, because I like to see these young guys. There was a guy, Coventry, who started the first half. He's a young kid. He played pretty well for a young kid. He made a couple of iffy decisions, but, I mean, all kids are going to do that. Outside of that, Masuaku, he looked lively down the left-hand side. He played him at left back, which hopefully where I would like to see him start further up the pitch and not play left back, because I think defensively he's too much of a liability. But going forward, he's electric. Outside of that, no one really caught my eye exactly. It's the first preseason game. I'm not looking to bash anyone for their performances yet. I'm just happy that they're playing games again.
Well, that's nice to hear that you're not ready to bash anybody yet. Because I also wanted to point out, I think it's funny, as we talk about kids playing in the first team, I remember when I started watching West Ham, I was 15, 16 years old, you know? And I seem to get older. The players never get older with me. It always feels like it's, we're watching 15, 16, 20-some-year-olds. So I couldn't imagine some of our 40, 50-year-old listeners who back in the day were the same age as the players.
Yeah, like what are we doing with our lives? We're sitting on a couch recording a podcast while these guys are living it up and being professional footballers and getting paid thousands of pounds a week to do play a game, basically. So
yeah, so yeah. What I said to Lewis our last guest, Lewis Hilton of the St. Louis FC in the USL Second Division. So if you missed that episode, take a quick trip back to our previous one and listen to our awesome interview there. But instead of the last time, I was sitting there eating corn chips doing a podcast. Now I'm drinking 21st Amendment Brewery Hell or High Watermelon. It's a watermelon wheat beer. Gotta check it out. Wanted to throw in that little shout out while we're talking about chilling.
That does sound delicious. Anyway, I don't think we have anything more to talk about. It does sound good. I've got to be honest. I wish I had something to drink right now. I'm just sitting here. Very hungry and thirsty. You're making me jealous with the watermelon beer. But outside, I don't have anything to add more about that preseason game. I mean, people like freaking out on Twitter that we lost to a bunch of farmers from Switzerland, as I saw a few guys say. Like, it literally means absolutely nothing. So we're not even going to give them attention.
No.
Let's keep it positive. Let's move on. So since our last show, and maybe we might have even talked about Ryan Fredericks on the last show, So he's a free transfer from Fulham. We kind of touched on this last week as well, but last month, Byram and Zabaleta, what does this mean for them? What do you kind of think about Ryan Fredericks briefly?
Well, surely I think on the wage that they brought him in, that I don't think you're going to have him as a paperweight on the bench. So I'm assuming Pellegrini's going to be working Fredericks into the starting 11. One thing I do want to point out, though, is I'm not sure what we were going to do with Byram and Zabaleta, because I was thinking about this over the time that we talked last time, is I thought that Byram surely will be going. But you would think that Zabaleta is how old now?
I don't know exactly how old he is, but he's not young.
No,
I know
he's
that
not young
for sure.
At all. He's probably 36, 35. So in the next year or two, surely he'll be moving on. So will we keep all three, and then when Zabaleta leaves, Byram will then be the backup still? Also, on Byram's point of view, is he probably wants first-team football. So he might want to move on. So I'm not really sure where this is all going to tie in, but surely I think Fredericks must be the starter at some point this season.
Yeah, whether if it's the first week against Liverpool or it's closer to Christmas, I don't know. Fredericks actually was a guy that looked pretty good today, so he was one of the guys I was looking out for. He looked really good going forward. Defensively, he just looked a step off the pace. But going forward, he looked really quick. So I think it's a new system, new team for him. I'm not taking anything away from that. I'm excited for Fredericks. I think he has to start over Zabaleta at some point. Byram, I don't blame him if he wants to go. I wouldn't have any issue selling him. So outside of that, I'm happy with Fredericks so far.
Yeah, so then our next signing is Issa Diop from Toulouse. He's a center back. We got for give or take, because we obviously have all those agent fees and bonuses, etc. But from my understanding, it's around £22 million we bought him from. Toulouse, he was their captain at 21, and he's the French U21 captain. So he's got pretty high wages as well. What are your thoughts on Issa Diop? Do you think it's a good signing? That was terrible. I know. I'm sorry. I'll cut that.
Yeah, you're hilarious. We'll have to add in the drum sound effect later on. No,
I tried it.
But in all seriousness, I'm thrilled with the signing of Diop. I got to be honest, I don't know a whole lot about him, or I didn't before he came to us. But it says something if you signed your club record transfer fee as a center back at 21 years old. I mean, all of these things are promising, and Pellegrini and the board must think really highly of him, because you don't pay £22 million for a center back unless you think he's going to be a world beater someday, especially not at 21 years old. So
especially not at West Ham. You better make sure you're damn good paying 20-some million dollars for a center back at West Ham, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So I'm thrilled with him. I'm excited to see what he has. He looked like a beast today. He looked really strong. He was beating defenders off the ball. He was beating them in the air. So he looked really good today. So that's exciting. I'm thrilled with Diop. What do you think about him?
Yeah, I mean, I'm excited for him too. I think exactly what you just said. You know, people are saying that we need to disagree more, but I can't. I think you nailed it right on the head, you know. All these positive things, he's coming in young. He's tall. We didn't even talk about how 6'4". I mean, the dude's a tower.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm just expecting him to, if you put that on his head, and we got Carroll in there as well, or if Cech is playing, I mean, we're going to have so many aerial targets. I would expect so much more on corners this season if we get the proper delivery.
Yeah.
But it begs the question, what about Deckers now? Declan Rice, you know? Not about his playing time, but he's been in and out of this new contract talks. And homie's coming in here with this massive contract. Surely Declan Rice is similar, right? Starting to break through on his national team. Played a lot of first-team minutes for West Ham this season. I feel like if you're lowballing the dude, he's probably going to be feeling some type of way.
Yeah, I think he's going to get paid either way. I don't think he's worried about it. If he is, if they don't offer him what he wants, he's going to be gone, as simple as. So he's going to get paid either way. He's going to get what's his. I have faith in that, and I have faith that we will make the right decision as a club to offer him what he deserves. So I'm honestly not worried about Declan Rice until I hear that he's really unhappy and he wants to go. I think he's going to be just fine.
Well, you know what, though? I think that he is a player that I really do not want to lose. Considering I saw how well he played this season, yeah, he made a few mistakes like the Arsenal game or the Newcastle game. But in reality, for his age, he had a strong season. He also has been playing well for Ireland, getting a player of the match last two or three games. And when I watched him against USA, he played a fantastic game in Dublin. So I really would not want to lose him, and I really agree with you. I hope that we pay the man his wages.
I'm sure we will. I really don't think it's going to be something that we need to worry about. So our third and not last signing, but our most recent signing that we've made, Lukas Fabianski. We signed him from Swansea for $7 million, the goalkeeper. So $7 million for a goalkeeper is not cheap. This day and age,
that was the last time we paid a big transfer for a goalkeeper. I don't think we paid much for Adrian, if anything.
No, I think he was a free.
So Adrian was a free. Jeskalainen was a free and old. So surely Rob Green was probably the last time that we paid for a goalkeeper.
Yeah, probably so.
Do you have high expectations for the man then for Fabianski, or do you think Adrian holds a spot?
I do have high expectations. You know, at first I was, like, indifferent on him. Like, you got relegated, so you couldn't have been stopping that many shots. You know, like, that goes through your head. But when I saw someone break down some stats from him, and he has one of the best saves to shots ratio in the Premier League, so that's promising. I think he is slightly better than Adrian. Adrian just has, like, way too many howlers in him and way too many moments where you think, God, what is he doing there? I mean, not a ton, but I can't honestly think of Fabianski making, like, you know, when you watch Premier League highlights, like, every week, I can't remember Fabianski making critical errors that, like, we saw from Joe Hart and Adrian this season. So when I sat back, looked at the stats, I think he's a good signing. I think he will be our number one. You don't pay $7 million for a guy, for a goalkeeper that's going to ride the bench. Adrian will get his starts, and if Fabianski gets injured, Adrian will be a good backup keeper. Now it's whether Adrian's happy battling for his spot or does he want to go. I've heard differing reports on that, but and he was at the World Cup with Poland, so I mean he's no mug. So I don't know. What do you think about him?
My thing with Fabianski is, people were like, oh, well, he got relegated, like you just said. However, Butland got relegated. Everybody wanted him.
Yeah.
So, let's see. It was Stoke, Swansea, I don't know West Brom's keeper.
Foster.
Is it Ben Foster. Foster still?
No, it's Ben Foster.
Ben Foster.
He signed. He just signed for someone too, like the other day. I can't remember who it was. I'll have to Google that. But well,
point of the story is, if we're talking about Fabianski fighting against Adrian for that top spot, I mean, there are some saves this season that you see Adrian make, and you're like, "Damn, how did he even get there?" For me, yeah. Adrian's that keeper that he does so much stupid shit. Like, how many times, like, that miscommunication at the beginning of the season, or I just feel like he's done a lot of sketchball stuff, but he also comes through and makes incredible saves that you're like, oh, wow. So, for me, it's that high-risk, high-reward inconsistency, and I don't like that from my goalkeeper. You know, I'm thinking with Fabianski, I'm hoping you're getting a guy that is going to consistently, in and out, put in a strong performance, and hopefully with the new back line and a new system, he won't even be needed as much.
Definitely. I totally agree with that. And by the way, Ben Foster signed for Watford. He did just sign for Watford. But anyway, I completely agree with what you're saying, though. I think he's going to deliver a more consistent performance on a week-to-week basis, and that's really, in the end, what you're looking for.
Yeah, it'll be good morale for the defense, too. You'll trust and believe in the guy behind you.
Yeah, definitely. But anyway, so those are all the guys that we've signed in so far. The next thing we want to talk about, we have the rumors. And I don't even know that I can call this next one a rumor anymore.
No.
It sounds more like, when is it going to happen? But Jack Wilshere. So the last episode we did, we talked about Jack Wilshere. And it didn't sound like we were going to sign him at all because X had come out and said Pellegrini was not interested. But that was one day before we lost Lanzini for the season. So things changed. What are your thoughts on Jack Wilshere?
I don't think he's a direct replacement. I don't see them playing the same type of game. I just don't see it. I think he'd be a good player to have on the team. I think he's a talented player when he's healthy. Especially him taking a wage cut to come to his boyhood club, so I think that his mind's going to be in the right place. His passion's going to be on the field. I just don't think he's a direct replacement. So I still think you need that playmaker unless there's something that I don't know. Now, I wouldn't say that I watch every Arsenal game, but from every time I watched Wilshere, he seems like a solid number 8. I wouldn't put him at the top of a midfield diamond and expect him to pull the strings.
Yeah, no, I see where you're coming from. But I see him, and maybe you're right, maybe people kind of see him as more of a box-to-box midfielder.
Right.
But I think he is so creative, and he's so good going forward, and he's good in defense, too. Really, I mean, I think he is an outstanding player when he's not injured. This season, he was one of Arsenal's best players. He played 38 games last season.
That goes really unnoticed, by the way. Like, he had a quiet 38. Not quiet as in bad, but quiet as in, like, he played 38 games. That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, he wasn't injured last season. So, at least he wasn't at the end. But still, I mean, that says something. I mean, he had to grind through that whole Europa League season where he played almost every Europa League game. So, I mean, I'm thrilled with Jack Wilshere.
I'm going to jump in here because for me, he seems more of a replacement for Cech. You know, because Cech is that box-to-box, sitting back kind of guy. But what do we always complain about Cech? That he doesn't track lazy.
Yeah, he's lazy and he turns the ball over too much.
Right. So for me, Wilshere is that replacement. Is he's going to run around. He's going to do some more passing than Cech, hopefully on target, and he's going to be a presence in the midfield. You know, he just won't have that towering header and physicality that Cech has.
Yeah, I agree. I still think we need that attacking midfielder, and I don't know if we're looking at anyone in that position, and I think we are looking at someone in that position. We'll get to that guy a little later. But
Let's get to him now. Let's get to him now while we're on it.
Well, hang on. So X says that deal should be done Monday or Tuesday, Jack Wilshere. So it sounds like he is definitely coming. So I just want to
I'm jumping in here. I'm sorry. I know I shouldn't talk over you, but if you're listening to the podcast on Monday or Tuesday, that signing is probably coming. If you listen to this podcast later in the week, then we already had a signing. So keep that in mind.
So I guess we can just jump straight to the big story that kind of crawled out. I guess it was
out of nowhere.
It was last Wednesday, because I listened to the West Ham Way show, and X had said on that show, he said, "We have been offered a player to us by the club and by their agent that used to play for us." And he said that his sources did not want this news getting out right away. So he wrote down on a piece of paper the name of the player and signed and dated it. And he said this story will probably break within 2 weeks. Well, it was the next day. Sean Wetson from More Than Just a Podcast tweeted out a poll asking, would you take Dimitri Payet back at the club? And then X quoted the tweet with the big eyes emoji, like, look at this. And so, and I thought even before that it was Dimitri Payet. I thought that's exactly who they were talking about. So word got out. It spread like wildfire on Twitter. I mean, I woke up and just saw Payet this, Payet that. And my mind was kind of blown, because you would not think that'd probably be the last guy you would expect to come back to West Ham. So I know we have differing views on this. What are your thoughts?
Well, I want to go in right before we have this discussion. Good friend of the podcast, Scott Davis, made a list of sold players since 2014-15. Okay? So that would be the whole list of people it could have possibly been. It was Diame, Downing, Maiga, Jarvis, Zarate, Payet, Tompkins, Ayu, Sacco, Nordveit, Fletcher, Randolph, Font, Valencia, and Fuguli. Any of those players that you would take back before you knew it was the Payet?
Like, are there any players I would pick out from that list and say, yeah, I'd have them back? Is that what you're asking?
That is exactly what I'm asking, before you knew it was going to be Payet.
Yeah, I would have picked, off that list, I'd pick Payet. I would pick James Tompkins.
Yep.
And honestly, that's probably it. There's no one else that I'm really dying to have back. It would have been those two guys.
Well, we agree there, kind of, sort of. But what? Okay, so where should we start with this situation? Because we don't want to get carried away here about Dimitri Payet, because the deal seems unlikely from all the people who've talked about all the in the know so far. Speculating that his wages will be higher than before, because he got a raise when he went back to Marseille, and a transfer fee that's slightly higher than what we sold him for. So, keeping that in mind, do you really want him back?
Yes, absolutely. Manuel Lanzini's out for potentially all of next season. They're saying he might come back for the start of 2019. I wouldn't be amazed, but because we've seen NFL guys, because us in the States are kind of used to this injury, it seems like, more than over there, because we see it in the NFL all the time. But I would be surprised if he was back by January or February. But Dimitri Payet fills that role 110%. He hasn't lost any of his creativity. I know he didn't make the France squad. I'm not sure why exactly, because he still created the most chances, I think, in the world. Don't quote me on that, but I saw a stat saying he was one of the most creative players in the world this season. He's still scoring from free kicks. He's still scoring from open play. He's still assisting. Was the way he left terrible? Yeah, I was hurt when he left. But
that's not even why I don't want him back, though.
Go ahead.
That's not the reason why I don't want him back. The reason I don't want him back is we always give the club some shtick for not putting their money where their mouth is. But this to me seems like bad business. You know, paying 25, almost 30, because what do we get rid of him for? 25 plus add-ons.
No, so, I think we only – is that what we sold him for?
I believe it was 25. So
here, I'll Google it while you rant.
Okay. Well, you should listen while I rant, because I'm telling you this is
the facts. I'm listening.
All right. we're going, if we're going 25, that means it's probably in the 25 to 30 range, okay? And more wage for someone who's already gained a year in age, so 31, right? Mm-hmm. He'll be scratching 31. When I'm paying 25, not me specifically, but if we're paying $25 million plus for somebody, my goal is to have them for at least 3 or 4 solid years. And if we're talking about 3 or 4 solid years for Payet, yeah, we need to replace Lanzini. 3 or 4 years from then, he's 34, 35. You're looking at, I don't see him being productive for another 3 or 4 years for $25 million. I would rather pay more money for somebody who's younger or pay less money for him. I would take him back on maybe, I don't know, 15, but I really doubt that Marseille is going to take 15.
No,
that $10 million is a lot. That 25 is a lot, especially for West Ham when we just broke our record on a 22 million pound defender. Are we really paying 25 for a 31 winger who's probably going to be, I don't know, lost his legs, quote, in 2 years? Nah, not enough for me.
He doesn't rely on pace to beat people. And yes, he is pacey, but that's not what he relies on. So his age doesn't worry me. I would pay what they want at a reasonable price. So if they want 27 for him, roughly 28, I'd probably pay it. Mainly if Lanzini wasn't injured, I would be holding the reins back on this. But he is a direct 100% upgrade even on Lanzini. So we don't lose anything at the beginning for this half of the season that he potentially could be out, maybe even the whole season. If he really wants to come back, I don't need an apology. Some fans are saying they need an apology. I personally don't need one.
I don't need one.
For me, if Mark Noble is willing to accept his apology, that's good enough for me. And if he can convey that message to the rest of the team, if they're willing to play with him and bring him back as one of our own, that's fine by me. So I think he's worth the money. I think he's worth, I don't even think it's a gamble. We've proven that he can play in this league and light it on fire. So, and he's the best player I've ever seen play for West Ham. I'm willing to take him back 100%. I'm ready to go all in on the Dimitri Payet bandwagon.
I mean, I have no problem with him personally. You know, I feel like he kind of did his dirty, but I don't even think that was us. I think that he had his own personal problems and he just said, screw it to us and wanted to deal with that first. But mine's more on the financial end side and the status of the club. You know, I would want him back on a much lower everything, transfer fee and wage. I mean, you know I'm going to bring it up. 3-2 at Everton. What he scored. Oh, chills. Chills in my body. I feel like it's a staple. I have to check it off every podcast I mention that game. Oh, but, no, I have no problem personally. I just don't want to see us dropping $30 million. And I don't know where that will leave the rest of the transfer funds. And if we're short elsewhere because we had to buy him back. I'd rather pay 30 for maybe a 25-year-old that we can get 5-6 seasons on a new contract. Or if they come in at 25 and we sell them for a higher fee because they show out, kind of like Payet did, then that works for me.
Yep. We'll just agree to disagree. I think it's worth the money. I think he still has 3 or 4 good years in him. Just based on the free kicks fact alone, I mean, you put him on a dead ball from 20 to probably 35 yards outside the area, he can score from there, from doing nothing other than hitting a free kick. So I think he's worth the business. I think West Ham fans will love him again. I think the polls I've seen all have been in favor of bringing him back. So I don't think the trust issue is a big worry. He'll probably get a little stick, but if he comes out and does make an apology, that'll go a long way. But let's be clear here. X has said this deal is still very unlikely. He said on the show, though, which is kind of what got people riled up, he said it was off and he didn't want to mention it. And then he came back later the next day and said, it's not completely off. It's still a possibility of it happening, but it still is very unlikely. So we got to keep that in mind.
So it's just all over the place.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like it's going to happen, but I would have a very big erection if it does happen.
To me, it just seems like in a kind of comparison, when Pirlo went to New York City FC at 37. No, Dimitri Payet's not 37. Okay, I get that. I'm not an idiot. However, they brought him in there as a status icon, which is what Payet would be if he came back, because he was a fan favorite. The dude barely ran around the pitch, but tried to bang in free kicks and distribute without moving around, and it failed epically, and I can see the same thing happening here. Now, 37 is different than 31.
Yeah, I don't think there's any correlation between the two, especially, I mean, that was literally a retirement home for Pirlo. I don't see, I have to respectfully disagree with that analogy. I don't think there's going to be any correlation between the two.
I guess we'll see what it is. Maybe we'll have to throw out a poll and see what our listeners think. But the next rumor that I saw in the last few days is Andrei Yarmolenko.
Yep.
Pronunciation, I'm not Ukrainian, so that was going to be a little difficult as it is. But he's from Borussia Dortmund. This last season, played most of his career at Dynamo Kiev. Rumored to be around 17.5 million for a right winger, 77 caps for Ukraine. I've seen him play a few times watching Dortmund because Christian Pulisic from the United States plays for Dortmund as well. What are your thoughts on the 17.5 million and him versus Anderson?
Yeah, I'm not over the moon about this one. Yes, Dortmund's a big club, but I don't think he even played very much this season. I think he rode the pine almost the entire season.
He had 18 appearances.
Okay, well, I mean, that's not terrible. I'm sure most of those are off the bench, but yeah, I don't know. I've seen him play for Ukraine a few times, and he does score fairly often, but I don't know. This one doesn't excite me that much. And I know more about him than I did Anderson, though. So I don't know what to expect with Anderson. So do I like this one better? I don't know. I really don't. I think he'd be eager to come in and play. So if that's something, so I don't know. I'm kind of indifferent on it.
Yeah. You know what? I don't want them to do the Anderson move just because I don't like seeing them getting bullied. You know, I'm at this crossroads. I don't know where you're at. But you know how we always complain about the board not spending?
Yeah.
But then they come across Anderson and they're getting bullied. And Lazio say 35. We say, okay, we'll give you 35. And then they're like, actually, we want 37, so board's like, okay, we'll give you 37. This is all supposedly from if they're actually doing it or not. But And then they're like, nah, we actually want 40. You know, for me, I would be like, okay, you know, take that 40 up your ass, and we'll find somebody else for half or the same. You know, I don't know enough about Felipe Anderson to be like, okay, he's worth 40 million, but I just think that the way that Lazio is handling this transfer business, you know, I'd tell them to go fuck themselves if it was me.
Yeah, I agree. It sounds like they are purposely trying to bully us because we're a Premier League team and they know that we have extra money to spend. So, yeah, I agree with you. I'd rather spend 17.5 rather than 40. Whether or not Yarmolenko is a massive upgrade on Anderson, I have no idea. But I'm glad we're not spending 40 million on one player who I don't know a whole lot about. If we're going to spend 40, I'd rather it be on someone that I'm really excited about and know a lot about. But anyway, the next rumor guy that we have coming in here, I think it was confirmed by Corinthians. Corinthians put out a statement saying we had matched the release clause for him. So it sounds like we're going to get him. It's Fabian Balbuena from Corinthians. He's a Paraguayan international. He's a center back. So that would be the next center back that Pellegrini wants to sign, because he wants to sign one more. It doesn't sound like we're going to get Mawson if we get Balbuena. So again, I don't know a whole lot about him, but he's a defender, and I think we could use all the defensive help we can get.
It sounds to me like that's a Pellegrini signing, though. I mean, from my guess is that, okay, dude's from Paraguay. Pellegrini probably has an extensive scouting network in the South American region. That to me seems like that would be something that he would know the player and his style of player. Because in reality, I want people who are run by our director of football and our manager. You know, David Sullivan is, I don't think he's ever played football. You know, he's obviously never coached it.
Yeah.
So I would like it all brought in by the guys who actually handle the team every day, and I want the money to come out of his pocket.
Yeah.
So we'll see where this leads. I think the whole director of football, Pellegrini thing will be a good thing. I just hope that we give them a chance. You know, I have high expectations for the season, but I also have this understanding that the dude's coming in, and I don't know if we're going to have an immediate Bilic season. You know, Super Slav had that crazy last season at the Bolin in his first season, you know what I mean? I don't know what really to expect from Pellegrini, and I hope people give the dude a chance. I'm very, very, very concerned that everyone's high expectations for him, and we finished 12th, which I think if we finish 10th through 12th and do not have a relegation battle, to me that's a successful season for his first season. But I can already see it now that Twitter warriors are going to have a heyday.
Yeah, I can. I see where you're coming from too. I don't think people's expectations are too through the roof yet. I think most people would be happy with a 10 to 12 season and a relegation battle free year. So I think most people are on board with you, but I am not going to go and say everyone is, because I have seen people saying, oh, if we sign Payet and Wilshere and we get a nice center forward, that we could really go on a European push. And that's simply just not the case. It's way too early. So I think we need to give Pellegrini at least one season to find his footing a little bit and get comfortable. And then next season and the season after that, we can really start to go for it. Outside of that, so those are all the rumors that we have coming in. What about outs? It's rumored that Jordan Hugel has offers from Leeds and QPR, both on loan and permanently, I've seen. So he came in for $8 million. We're not sure how much we want to get back out of them. So I wouldn't be too upset to see Hugel go. I wasn't too thrilled to see him come in. So he might go. We also have the likes of Burke and Cullen. They might go. Where do you kind of stand on these guys potentially leaving?
Yeah, you know what? Hugo, I wouldn't mind going. Something's been bothering me the last few days is people on Twitter, and I'm just going to loop Hugo in with Burke and Cullen. I hate when people are saying that these guys aren't getting a fair shake. And, oh my gosh, why don't we give them first team minutes and stuff and that?
Yeah.
You know, I've kind of had enough of that. It's really annoying me because, in my opinion, if they were good enough, they would have gotten that shot. You know, no disrespect for Burke and Cullen, because they seem, I mean, I don't know, on Twitter and interviews, they seem like cool cats. I don't know them personally. But maybe they just aren't good enough. You know, just plain and simple. Maybe they're just championship players or League One players. Maybe they just aren't Premier League players. I don't know why people can't accept that as an outcome. You know, Rice was given his opportunity. He took it. Was Burke and Cullen given the same opportunities in training? Who knows? Maybe Rice had much better training results, and he got his first team shot. Maybe Burke and Cullen weren't cutting it in training.
Yeah.
Cullen's gotten all those awards at Bradford and such, but in reality, Bradford is not West Ham United.
Yeah.
So maybe I just don't think maybe they're just not good enough, and I hope that they get first team minutes in a lower division where they can become solid players. However, I don't have time to quote waste on youngsters that just won't cut it. I have no problem playing youth. Youth don't bother me. But if they ain't good enough, I don't want to shoehorn them in there, you know?
Yeah, I agree. So I wouldn't be devastated to see any of them go. Out of the three, Josh Cullen, I think, would be the toughest one to lose because I think he plays a role where he could potentially come in and fill Noble's boots because he plays that defensive midfielder role. But if they're wanting some first team action, they got to go and get it because they obviously aren't going to be getting it here. A couple other guys that might be going. I haven't seen any rumors on Kouyaté, so it sounds like Pellegrini wants to keep him. So it sounds like he'll be sticking around. The other one, Byram, potentially we don't know what's going to happen with him, but Snodgrass, does he stay? Does he go?
I've heard nothing on that. And same with Carroll. I haven't heard anything there either.
It doesn't sound like we haven't had a whole lot of activity drummed up on the out rumor mill because, but it does sound like Snodgrass doesn't want anything to do with West Ham anymore. So we'll see whether he wants to go back to the championship again. I don't know because personally, I think he is good enough to play in the Premier League, but just doesn't seem like with us. But if he's willing to stick around, I'm willing to give him another shot if he's willing to work for it. But outside of that, there hasn't really been a whole lot of rumors of guys being sold. Even Chicharito. I mean, yeah, I know he's been at the World Cup. That probably has a lot to do with it because they're not trying to seek a move. They're playing at the World Cup. So probably in the next couple of weeks, we're going to start to see these things, the wheels start turning again on all transfers in and out. So I pray that Pellegrini has convinced Chicharito that he is 100% part of our plans, but we'll see.
Yeah, man, I agree. I hope we keep Chicharito too. Those rumor mills have been dry, but you know what hasn't been dry? The bellies of English people at these World Cup parties. So we're going to take a quick break. We're going to do some World Cup talk, and we're going to get you on the way.
Hi everybody, it's Tom Rennie from TalkSport. Make sure you're listening to the American West Ham podcast with Brawley and Tony whenever you can. It's the best place for American West Ham news. Just like when we signed John Harkes. That was good, wasn't it?
Talk about football coming home. And then one night in Rome, we were strong, we had grown. And now I see it's ready for war, as good as before, sheer certain to score. And Psycho screaming,
it's coming home, it's coming home, it's coming. So England, into the semifinals. Who would have thought we'd be saying that? I know I certainly didn't. Most English people that I have seen and talked to have said they would have accepted a quarterfinal going out in the quarters. And now England's in a semifinal for the first time since 1990. So, and we won't just talk about England. This entire World Cup, has been the most exciting World Cup I've ever seen. I don't know why you're yawning, because this has been the most exciting World Cup I have ever seen, and maybe the most exciting and dramatic World Cup in World Cup history. I know you've been working a lot of it, so you haven't been able to see. I've also been working for almost all of it, but I've managed to get the game on my phone or the computer every single game. I've only missed, I think I've watched every single game at least for 10 to 20 minutes, except for one, and that was Denmark and Australia. It was someone in that group, but I've watched every single game apart from that. So I know you haven't got to see a lot of it, and the England stuff kind of bores you, but what are your overall thoughts on this World Cup?
You know what? This is where it must be nice being half English, because I've had barely any interest in the World Cup, partially because I've been working during the daytime when it's on in America here, but also the United States is not in it. So I watch English, England's cricket team. I watch England's rugby team. I like golf. I watch Wimbledon. I'm all for all those England stuff, okay? Because those are pretty whack in America, maybe except for the golf. But, like, I watch the root for Lewis Hamilton in Formula One, all that. But when it comes to the soccer, the football, I just can't. I tried it. Like, I watch the games and I enjoy it and I root for them, but I can't actually root for them at a World Cup or something that means something. Can't do it. I'm American, you know? We're not in it. I'm all for the United States men's national team. I told you about this last time when I went to Wembley. And I had my England jersey on. I thought I was going to be all about it, and I just felt like a phony. So, nope, no interest in England. And I hope England wins, because I want all my friends to be happy. However, I'm also salty as fuck. And if they did lose and everyone stopped celebrating all the time, I could stop being jealous.
Well, I don't – like, no one is forcing you to support England, so – I think the only one that was trying to support England was yourself, is what you're saying.
Yes, like, yes, that is okay. Correct. I'm not. No one's forcing me to. It's just living in England and wanting to move there, I've tried to force myself to get into some of the culture. Like, I really took to cricket. So if any of our listeners are big cricket people, talk to me about cricket. It's something I've been learning. But back to the World Cup stuff, I just can't root for the English team. Can't do it.
I personally think the World Cup is the best sporting event on planet Earth, and if England were not in it, I would still be just as into the World Cup as if England were not there or the United States were not there. I would watch every single game as much as I could. So it surprises me to hear that you aren't as interested, because I have just absolutely adored this World Cup start to finish. I mean, it started with Russia tonking Saudi Arabia 5-0, and then in the next couple of days, we saw Mexico beat Germany for the first time in their history. We saw Germany lose to South Korea and being eliminated for the first time ever in a group stage. The drama that's gone on. Brazil didn't have the best qualifying stage. Neymar rolling around on the floor. I mean, that was my least favorite thing about this World Cup, probably my only negative about this World Cup. But even VAR, who I've had a complete change of heart on and then gone back again. So I originally was a huge VAR advocate. Then we saw some of the qualifiers, the VAR that was having an impact on some of those games, and it was terrible. But now we're getting the drama, because we're getting all of the penalties that should be being called. Because, you know, referees purposely keep the whistle out of their mouth if a foul goes in the area.
Right,
that
you think it.
Yeah, if any other part of the pitch that happens, it's a foul. But since it's in the area, it's not. Well, now you're seeing the referees let it go, and then they're coming back to it and saying, hey, yeah, that's a pen. Or it's a handball, that's a pen. There's been more penalties at this World Cup than any other World Cup in history. And it makes sense, because now we're getting all those decisions correct. And it's amazing.
Yeah, you know what? I will relate it back to most of the thing of me working during the day. And I've watched some of the weekend games, and they've been incredible, though, some of them. I mean, how about this last, these two qualifiers on, you got, Russia and Croatia.
Yeah.
Going to, extra time. You know, you got, the Colombia-England game going to extra time. This, I think, feel like we've had a lot of extra time games in these knockout rounds.
Yeah, there was three round of 16 games went to penalties, and that's the first time that's ever happened. And how about Japan being 2-0 up on Belgium, and then Belgium storming incredible. Back to win in regulation?
Yeah, so, you know what, I mean, I think this has probably been one of the most exciting World Cups. It just, it almost breaks my heart not being interested in it. I hope that comes around next one. Hopefully the United States qualifies and I get into it. You know, I appreciate your passion for it, and I think it's cool. You know, but it just wasn't for me. Call me club
fine.
Over country all you want. It wasn't my cup of tea.
And I would have said, I'm sorry to cut you off, and I would have said before, I'm club over country, and this World Cup. And I'm sure a lot of English people's fans are opinions are changing on this, but this has been the most unified England I've ever seen, and just the celebration and it's coming home as like a unifying phrase that everyone's saying. I mean, it's just been absolutely amazing to see. I mean, I went down to Amsterdam Tavern, my local pub. I had I had to work at 1 p.m. on Saturday. It was a 9 a.m. kickoff. I still went down. I made the 40-minute drive to downtown St. Louis to watch this game, and the pub was packed out. It was one in, one out. It was at capacity, full of English fans, and it was absolutely unreal. I mean, I've never seen people singing at a bar like that, singing It's Coming Home. They were singing the German bomber song, which I don't exactly care for because I understand the history and everyone hates Germany, blah, blah, blah. But all of these songs, the Southgate song, the Southgate, you're the one, you still turn me on, football's coming home again, all these songs. And I got to join in with that for the first time ever. So the camaraderie and just England making it past a quarterfinal is just something no one expected. So, I mean, it's been unreal. I have adored this World Cup from start to right now. England play Croatia on Wednesday. I'm off work for it. I'm absolutely buzzing. I'm sure Wednesday morning I'm going to be nervous as fuck. My nerves, my Apple Watch, I don't think I texted you, but I texted some of my other friends, and I know I'm ranting here. I'm sorry. I'm almost done. But during the penalty shootout, my Apple Watch was telling me my heart rate was exceeding the normal range.
Non-workout range.
Yeah, and they said you might need to seek medical assistance. And that happened one other time, Game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs when we beat the Blackhawks when I was there. That happened. My Apple Watch was doing that. But I digress. It's been the best World Cup ever. I'm loving it, and that's pretty much it. I don't know if you have any – I know you wanted to talk about the celebrations.
Oh,
so you see,
stop
you see
wasting
the fan,
beer.
You see the fan cams.
Stop wasting beer. What y'all doing? I'm all for limbs and carnage and crazy scenes. Stop wasting beer, man. That could you imagine getting in the queue and waiting like 15 minutes for a beer? And then all of a sudden your buddy, I saw the video. The dude walks right up to the front with three beers. Dele Alli scores. And his buddy takes the whole trays of beers and flips it over his head. I would be fucking pissed if I just waited 15 minutes. Because I'm sure there was lines for all that beer. They weren't just handing them out. So, no, drink your beer, get drunk, and enjoy it that way. However, those scenes are incredible. It just reminds me of some of the away days that we've had, but I've never actually been a part of a watch party that looks that incredible. I believe some sort of box bar in Croydon or something like that?
Yeah, the main ones you see have been in Croydon, but I know there's been, like our friend Liam Ward, he said his pub got smashed to bits. Whenever England's the penalty shootout, we won the penalties against Colombia. He said there were shattered windows and ceiling chandeliers and lights being busted and just absolute carnage. And you got a feel for some of these like pub owners, and they bring it on themselves by hosting these events, I guess. But you don't expect the place to be torn to bits. And like you see these people jumping on cars and ambulances and breaking them, which those you don't like to see that either. I think that's disgusting. Those people need to kind of watch themselves a bit more. But it is.
I mean, I don't advocate for violence and destruction, but I'd be a hypocrite to say that when the Eagles won the Super Bowl, that Philadelphia fans didn't go absolutely mental downtown in Philadelphia. My main shtick is don't waste the beer. I don't care what else you do. If you want to all fight and punch each other, I don't care. The beer is my biggest concern. That's one of my favorite things. So don't waste the goods.
Yeah, I can't imagine leaving one of those things. You'd be absolutely drenched.
Soaked. You'd probably need a towel.
I would love that. I really want to experience that, though. And I did a little bit, like, at the dam when who scored the first goal? McGuire. And then Ali scored. There was some beer flying, but it was on the other side. And the Americans weren't liking that. They were kind of like you. They were, like, pissed that they were getting wet. But I loved it.
I had that at an actual USA game before, but never had like a bar or something. I'd be pretty pissed. Is there anything else you want to jump about the World Cup? Because I think that's about all the time we got, or at least the time that I have this evening.
We've covered everything, and I'm just thrilled. Roll on Wednesday, come on England.
Yeah, I mean we really hit them hard with a really good episode tonight. I'm really excited to put this out. So if you want to follow us, Brawley, what's the Twitter?
You can follow us on Twitter at West Ham Pod USA. If you'd like to send us an email, like we say every week, we've gotten some kind emails over the past. Send us your thoughts. You can send them to AmericanWestHamPod@gmail.com. Yep. And if you guys have any other questions, comments, concerns, shoot us a DM, shoot us a tweet on Twitter. We respond to everyone as much as we can. So outside of that, I don't think we have anything else for you guys. Thanks for listening this week. Come on, you Irons, and also come on, England. It's coming home.